You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Hello, formation of flawless flashbulbs, flaunting flavorful flair. Welcome to Good Job Brain, your weekly quiz show and offbeat trivia podcast. This is episode 91, and of course, I am your humble host, Karen, and we are your platoon planning for pleasures and plethora of plantains.
I'm Colin.
I'm Dana.
And I'm Chris.
This is episode 91. We're on the road to episode 100.
The long death march.
We haven't really planned what to do for our 100th episode yet. We're actually scheduling our recordings and planning some mini episodes so that the 100th episode of Good Job Brain will publish exactly on the day of our 2-year anniversary.
Oh.
Yeah, it just kind of fits that
nice.
Way.
Nice. Happy accident.
Mm-hmm.
What day is that?
The first episode came out on March 4th, 2012, and we're hoping that our 100th episode will come out on the same date in 2014.
All right.
Folks, if you have any ideas or suggestions about what we should do in our 100th episode, let us know. And furthermore, we are inviting you, listeners, for a chance to be on the show. We want to get some audience participation for our 100th episode. So one idea I had is like maybe record your lovely voice using your computer or voice recorder or even just your voice memo function from your phone. And you can tell us your favorite moments, why you like Good Job Brain, or let us know how you listen to the show or who you listen to the show with. And you can write songs or jingles or have your cats meow. I don't know. We just want some like cool audio bits. So state your name and what city you're in, and you can email us the audio file.
Oh, neat.
Video files will not be honored.
All audio files become the property of Good Job Brain.
All right. Without further ado, let's jump into our first general trivia segment, Pop Quiz Hotshot. I'm going to combine some Trivial Pursuit cards here, random from the box. You guys have your barnyard
buzzers. There's one with a picture?
There's one with a picture.
Oh, okay.
We're going to mash it up. All right, here we go. Blue Wedge for geography. French Village, French Castle, French Prince. But who's the only major character in Disney's film Beauty and the Beast with a French accent? Dana.
It's the candlestick.
Yeah.
What's his name?
Lumiere.
Yes. Lumiere, the candlestick, voiced by
Jerry Orbach.
Yes.
Oh,
Jerry Orbach from Law and Order.
Yeah.
And also who put Baby in the Corner. All right. Pink Wedge, pop culture. What kind of vehicle does Travis Bickle drive?
Oh, Chris.
A taxi cab.
Correct.
Yep.
A taximeter cabriolet.
It is Robert De Niro plays Bickle, the title character in the film, Taxi Driver.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Yellow Wedge. Who pleaded for calm in Los Angeles on May 1st, 1992, asking, can we stop making it horrible for the older people and the kids?
I'm gonna guess that's Rodney King.
Yes, Rodney King. He said this right after, can we all get along?
Mm.
Yeah.
All right, Purple Wedge. Whoa. Andy Warhol played himself on the 200th episode of what Aaron Spelling series?
Interesting.
Colin.
The Love Boat?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
The Love Boat says here, Marion Ross played a housewife trying to hide her past as a Warhol superstar from her husband, played by Tom Bosley.
Okay. Hmm. Okay.
All right. Green Wedge for science. The citrulline in watermelon can imitate the effects of what pharmaceutical?
Really?
Citrulline
and watermelon can imitate the effects of what pharmaceutical?
Chris.
The morning after pill.
Incorrect.
If only.
I don't know, like something anti-smoking patch or something.
It is Viagra.
Whoa.
Really? It says here, but you need to eat about 6 cups of watermelon.
Hot summer nights.
Wow.
That's okay. 6 cups of watermelon
is a lot. That's not that much.
Is it?
It's not 6 watermelons.
You could make a pretty normal size smoothie out of watermelon. 6 cups of watermelon.
A good old
watermelon smoothie.
Yeah.
It's a lot of watermelon. Your stomach's going to be pretty full. Like, with that much watermelon. Anyway.
Hey, honey, I'm going to eat both these watermelons tonight.
I might throw up on you, but...
Yeah, you have to stop and go pee every 5 seconds.
Yeah. Jeez.
Okay. Oh, my God. Okay. Well, that said, Orange Wedge, last question. What grain must make up at least 51% of the fermented mash from which bourbon whiskey is made? Talked about this on the show.
That is corn.
Yes. Good old American corn.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. Good job, brains.
Not bad.
I think everybody's still processing the
I'm still thinking about it. I'm like, wow. Wow. 6 cups.
All right. We are approaching the new year. And here I have a top 10 commonly broken New Year's resolution.
Oh.
I want to see if you can guess some of these.
Okay.
There's 5 main ones.
Lose weight.
Yeah. Lose weight, work out more.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Stop smoking.
Stop smoking is one.
Stop drinking.
Stop drinking is one.
Stop, okay. Mm-hmm. So smoking, drinking, lose weight.
Work out more.
Save money.
Yes.
Oh.
One last one.
Smoking, drinking, lose weight, save. All the things people don't do.
Right,
smoking,
right.
Yeah. Stop smoking.
So hence, this isn't the top most common or popular. These are top 10 commonly broken.
Broken, right, right.
And the last one is spend more time with family.
I was going to say that. I thought it would be too sad.
Yeah, I know. A little sad. That's broken. Definitely number one is lose weight and get fit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So in the spirit of that, today's episode, this week, we decided to talk about fitness and exercise, wacky stories, trivia, and quizzes about fitness. Whether or not you want to have that as your New Year's resolution or not, we're not judging, whatever. This is just fun trivia stuff. So this week, let's get physical.
Well, I'll start us off here with a quiz for you guys about famous athletic brands.
Okay.
And I would say in particular, athletic shoe manufacturers. Although these days, if you're an athletic shoe brand, you make all sorts of clothing and equipment.
They call it fashion.
Yes, it's true. It is a lifestyle.
Fashion sneakers. Exactly. Yeah, lifestyle sneaker.
Right, right, right. All right. So a lot of these will have to do with names, origins, symbols. Here we go. Let's kick it off.
That's my favorite.
So I know that you guys know the Nike Corporation takes its name from the Greek goddess of the same name.
Mm-hmm.
I know you guys know this.
Okay.
Yes. The Greeks actually pronounced it a little bit differently. The Greeks would say Nike. Yeah, Nike.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Nike.
Right. Yeah.
And further, you probably even know that she was the goddess of
victory.
Victory. Yeah. Indeed. That's right. Winged victory. Winged goddess of victory.
Whenever she didn't have a head.
Wait, really?
No.
Oh.
The very famous statue in the Louvre of the winged victory. Yeah. She does not have a head, unfortunately.
Got it.
Yeah. Okay.
But that is of a Nike.
That is her.
Yep.
Oh,
okay. Yep.
Okay. Yes.
As you guys know, the gods and goddesses have Greek and Roman equivalents. So tell me who is the Roman equivalent of Nike?
Is it a common name?
It is a common name today. It is a common girl's name even today.
We took a real circuitous path to that question.
Interesting. Yeah.
The Roman goddess of victory.
This
and it's
a
common
good
girl's
trivia
name
one
today.
To know. Common girl's name today. I'll give you a little hint.
Okay.
It's directly related to her sphere of influence. Karen.
Victoria.
Victoria. Yes.
Cool.
Victoria, the Roman goddess of victory.
Huh.
Man, we did take a circuitous path.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to ask, what was the original name of Nike's company?
What was it?
Blue Ribbon Sports.
Oh, right.
Oh, okay.
I think I heard that before.
That's not as good.
Yeah. No. Who, what, or where is Reebok named after?
Oh my God, I know.
Isn't it? It's an animal, right?
It is an animal.
Like a deer,
springbok.
It is an antelope. Yes, in fact, yes. Yeah. And Reebok, springbok. Yes, yeah, similar.
I meant antelope,
name.
Not antler.
Yeah.
I was like spelling it in my mind. Yeah.
a gray Reebok or Reebok, sometimes spelled, is a type of antelope. The Reebok that we're talking about, we spell it in English R-H-E-B-O-K. So the R-E-E-B-O-K was not some sort of intentional stylized, you know, so they could copyright it or trademark or anything like that. The company that we call Reebok was founded a long time ago. It was J.W. Foster & Sons Shoe Company, going back to 1895.
From where?
In England. The Reebok name didn't come along until the late 50s, early 60s. They changed their athletic apparel line to Reebok. At that time, J.W. Foster's grandsons were running the company. They chose the name out of a dictionary. And they kind of liked the sound, thought it sort of fit well for athletic shoes. But here's the fun part. It was a South African edition of the dictionary. And R-E-E-B-O-K is how you spell Reebok in Afrikaans. That's right. And so they just took it from there, and hence...
Wow.
Reebok. The lore also goes, I guess, that the dictionary was won in a race by one of the grandsons. So it had also the extra connotation of being won in a foot race.
This is a winning dictionary.
Yeah. Right, yeah. Right.
What a weird prize.
It's a Bravo prize.
Yeah. Yeah. It sounds a little too pat to me, I have to say. Here's your South African dictionary. Yep.
I don't want a book.
Here's your dictionary, nerd.
Yeah. What is the historical connection between the Adidas and the Puma shoe companies? Karen.
They are founded by rival brothers.
They are indeed founded by rival brothers. Yes, brothers who hated each other.
Yeah,
this is just a bitter... This rivalry consumed not just the brothers, but their wives, their families. It ended up, even consuming the town to an extent.
When did it start?
So they started the Dassler brothers. Let's back up here. The Dassler brothers, Adolf Dassler and Rudolf Dassler, started a shoe company.
They had cutesy matching names.
Yeah.
In Germany in the 1920s. And it was going pretty well, but they just... The rifts between them started to grow. And after World War II... they ended up splitting essentially into two rival companies. And so Adolf Dassler founded Adidas. His nickname was Adi for Adolf, Adi Dassler. And that's where Adidas comes from. It's a portmanteau of his name. Adi Dassler, Adidas. Rudolf founded, we call it Puma now. When he founded it, he called it Ruda. From Rudolf Dassler.
Wow. Adidas and
someone,
Rudidas,
yeah, I think someone whatever. Convinced him maybe that Puma was a little bit more marketable.
Rudolf.
Yeah. So Adidas and Puma, yes, and were fierce rivals marketing soccer shoes. The story goes that Adidas really became the one that took off the most, partly due to an argument that Rudolf had with the head coach of the German national soccer team. So the story goes that he had some argument with the coach of the team, and Adidas, Adi's company, eventually ended up getting the contract to supply the West German team. In 1954, they ended up winning the World Cup. I mean, like, as underdogs. And just from there, they're like, great, all right, you won the World Cup wearing Adidas, and all of a sudden, boom, just took off from there.
It's funny. So he's just in a fight with his brother. He's in a fight with the German coach. And if everybody in the world's a jerk, I don't know. Maybe
But the two companies are still successful.
They are still successful today. It did take Puma a long time to kind of catch up to the level of where Adidas is. All right, we'll close it out here with a good trivia slash story question for you guys. I don't know. So for a lot of people, I can definitely say for myself, the absolute just most iconic athletic shoe is
All-Stars.
The Converse All-Star, the Chuck Taylors. Yeah, I mean...
Visually.
Yeah, if you're an artist or, you know, you need to just convey athletic shoe, it's just, that classic high-top shape, the rubber toe cap, the little...
Circle
with a star on the inner ankle. Yeah, just classic. Bona fide classic.
Do you know they used to wear those, like, actual athletic?
Oh, yeah.
It's not really good for you, right? Because they have no support whatsoever.
No, but that was, like, the athletic show of the old days.
Who was Chuck Taylor? Karen, quickly.
Chuck Taylor was actually a basketball player, and he was professional. And he, I think, was a consultant for the Converse company, was naturally a really good salesman, and started kind of evangelizing the sport of basketball and the shoe.
Yeah.
He helped develop.
Right? Yeah, that is all correct. And the only part...
All these questions are within my wheelhouse.
Yeah, you were just on it with the shoes. No, all of that is correct. And then the only other bit to add is he was indeed a professional basketball player. It was non-traditional in the sense of today, you know, we think of Kobe Bryant or Michael Jordan
or
sponsoring
LeBron James,
shoes coming from professional. He became a professional basketball player playing for a Converse created Converse-sponsored kind of barnstorming-style team. So this is so interesting to me. The Converse All-Star was introduced in 1917. So it's an old shoe. And this was basically their way of getting into the basketball market. Like, up until that time, you know, Spalding had been making basketball athletic shoes, you know, without a lot of serious competition.
They make the balls, right?
And Converse started making their All-Star shoes. At the time, Chuck Taylor was in high school, a high school player. He started wearing them, loved them. He was in Indiana, and people in Indiana take their basketball very seriously. He went to the Converse company in 1921, basically saying, I want a job helping to sell your shoes. And they loved his moxie so much that they're like, all right, kid, we will create a position for you as our leading evangelist. So
you cannot do that today. Just show up at the company and be escorted out by security.
Hey, Nike, I love your shoes.
Give me a job.
Give me a job.
No.
So he would travel the country putting on basketball clinics and literally selling shoes out of his car.
Nice.
He wasn't on commission. He didn't have a salary. But he loved the game, wanted to grow the game, was just a passionate teacher. He actually made the suggestion of putting that patch on the ankle. Yeah. That was his idea. And it was originally supposed to be protective.
Yeah, it's like strengthening.
It would protect that. Yeah, but you know, these days I think it's just screen printed on. Yeah. It's not even a real patch anymore.
Right.
So yeah, Chuck Taylor, absolute solid legend in the world of basketball.
I read his biography. Lots of people talking about how, yes, he was very good at his job, but he also liked to spend a lot of company's money.
Yeah, I've heard that as well. Yeah, I've heard that. I read that as well.
A lot of expenses and stuff.
Well, he wanted that job for a reason.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, speaking of fitness product evangelists, let me ask you this. For people roughly our age, when you hear the name Jack LaLanne, what is the first thing that pops into your head?
Carol. Old.
Okay.
For me, old man doing aerobics.
Old man doing aerobics.
And juicers.
Juicers. That's what I was going to say. For me, it's like the first time I ever saw Jack LaLanne, and really the only experience I ever had with him was turning on an infomercial when I was a kid and watching him sell the Juice Tiger on Amazing Discoveries, you know, that show that feigned pretense of being like a news magazine show, but it was just infomercials. The guy was always British. That's amazing. You know, and so Jack LaLanne would be on there selling the tiger, the juice tiger, the juice, which was later recalled because parts of it would go flying and kill people. But
like a real tiger.
You never
know when it's going to maul you.
Yeah, they didn't call it the juice kitten. But then Jack LaLanne's power juicer, which significantly fewer injuries, is now still on the market today. Okay. So I did not really know that much about Jack LaLanne, but he is the founder of the fitness movement. If you like go to the gym after work, you do that because Jack LaLanne put that idea in your head many years ago. So here is some trivia about Jack LaLanne, godfather of fitness. Henri François LaLanne is his actual name. Yep.
Ooh, la, la.
His brothers for some reason nicknamed him Jack when he was a kid. I don't know. He was born in 1914 here in San Francisco to French immigrants, obviously. As a teenager, he kind of started getting interested in health and the body and exercise and stuff like that. And when he was 21, he opened up what he says is, and what seems to be, basically the first modern health club, like what we would call the gym. Now, there had been like gymnasiums, you know, all over the place in Europe and whatever. And gymnasium, by the way, is Greek for
body,
nude exercising.
it means is a place to be naked. That is what gymnasium means. Gymnophobia. Gymnophobia is the fear of being naked. Gymno is just nudity. Because they exercise naked.
So I'm never nude. It's a gymnophobia.
Yep. So there's no, as far as I can tell, there is no exercise or anything like that in the word gymnasium. It just means like naked place.
Naked place.
Yep. So, you know, so kids, go to your high school gym, take all your clothes off and run around, and they can't do anything because it's what it is.
It's the naked place.
On the podcast, I heard that was okay. So like you could go to the YMCA at this time. This is in the 30s in America, and you could, you know, they had weights and you could lift weights if you wanted to, but like there was no sense of like as a regular thing, exercise daily just to maintain a state of health and fitness. Like you did that if you were like an athlete or a bodybuilder.
Regular
participating in bodybuilding.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. Lillian had this vision of you'd go there after work or in the morning or whatever, and you'd have a personal trainer, who at that time was Jack LaLanne, you know, and fitness goals and all that. He had a juice bar in there. This is in,
wow.
This is in 1936 in Oakland, California, downtown Oakland. Had a health food restaurant, you know, downstairs, and he opened it up, and nobody went there.
Ahead of his time.
There was no movement.
Super ahead of his time. He was the person who, you know, made it this way in the first place, and nobody went in. And he ends up, he gave massages for a while because he was trained. He went to school for chiropractic. Chiropractic medicine. Yeah. He went to school for that. So he gave massages. He gave massages to Trader Vic.
Ah,
yeah,
Yes. He of the Tiki Bar. Yeah, Oakland. Oakland.
The Mai Tai.
Victor Bergeron. Yeah.
Yep. So he'd give him massages, and that's how he was making money, and he was just trying to convince people to come in. And this is the way that Jack LaLanne did it. He went and he had a presentation at a high school. Now, at this point, people kind of knew who he was, like, in Oakland, because, like, you know, he was pretty ripped, which at the time people didn't really get that ripped. You know, he had been like a high school athlete, and he had been, you know, he had done like bodybuilding kind of stuff. So he went and he did a presentation on like health and fitness and everything.
Also, I could imagine that just seeing his energy at age 80, I can imagine what he was like
when
at
he was
age
21 when he opened this health club. He's super young. Went to a local high school, did a presentation about fitness, and all the kids just made fun of him. Because they knew that he did not, at this point, he didn't eat much meat almost at all. Mm. He didn't eat bread. He was just eating meat and vegetables and very little meat. He didn't drink Coca-Cola, nectar of the gods. You were a weirdo in 1936 if you didn't do those things. There was no sense of like why you wouldn't put that in your body. Like, who cares? Yeah. It's all delicious, you know. And they were making fun of him. They were teasing him. Like, they were asking him to comb his hair because of this belief that if you got big and muscly, you would lose the flexibility of being able to like reach your hand over your head. Like that stereotype you see in the cartoons of the big muscle guy walking down the street and can't move. That's what they thought it was like if you had big muscles, and they thought that like that's what they were going to become. So the kids all make fun of him, and he's like, you know what, forget it. He goes up, he says, I go up to the fattest kids in this high school and the skinniest kids in this high school, little scrawny kids, and he gets their home address from them. And he goes to their homes in the evening and he talks to their parents, and he says to the parents, I'm gonna have your kid. He's gonna lose, you know, 20 pounds in the first 3 weeks, or I'm gonna give you double your money back. And he goes to the skinny kids, I'm gonna put muscle on your kids. Yeah. So he has the parents sign the high school kids up for his fitness center. And that's how he got the bodies in the door. And
then body shame.
And then in his telling,
he's aggressive.
Well, I mean, he had to be, you know, but then they start seeing results. Then he says, Then the parents started calling in. And the parents, he said, they were just like, now don't tell anybody I'm coming in. Mm. Like, can you slot me in the morning and don't tell anybody? Because it was, doctors were telling their patients, do not go to this thing that Jack LaLanne is doing, because if you lift weights, you are going to get hemorrhoids, and you are going to have lowered sex drive, and you are going to give yourself a heart attack lifting all those weights.
I imagine the doctor smoking while giving this advice.
So what did they do when they got there? Well, they had all the equipment machines, like the leg extension machines and the weight selectors, because Jack LaLanne invented those.
Whoa!
Jack LaLanne invented those machines, and he worked with blacksmiths and machinists and had them custom build those machines.
Wow.
Yep. A lot of the stuff that's still in use today, he just invented it.
That's so weird that at some point in time, like, there's no concept of
exercising for everybody as something you should do to live a better life.
To maintain, as you said, to maintain fitness.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like you're either an athlete competing in a sport, or you don't exercise. Yeah. So he operates this gym for 15 years or so, gets very popular. Next big thing is TV show, The Jack LaLanne Show. Which was started out local to the San Francisco market, went national a few years later. He did exercise routines at home and tried to just get everybody to exercise along with him. He wore ballet slippers. because sneakers were not a thing at this point. Like, you know, as we kind of know after, you know, listening to Colin here, nobody just wore sneakers around the house or anything like that. So he wore ballet slippers on TV. Once it went national, they brought a dog onto the show. Originally, it was like his dog, and then they brought in another dog. And this is great for Good Job Brain listeners. You guys will love this. He had a contest to name the dog. And the winning entry that was submitted by a viewer, he named the dog Walter, which is short for "We All Love to Exercise Regularly." Yes. And so, I mean, he basically was just at that point, you know, just a national sort of name and would, you know, sell all kinds of exercise related products. If you name it, if it's related to health and fitness, he put his name on it. You know, he was a pitch man.
Yeah.
You know, he was great at being a salesman. As he got older, you probably heard about these things too. He would start to do like crazy feats, like news making feats. 1954, when he was 40. He swam the length of the San Francisco Golden Gate Bridge underwater with air tanks, like not holding his breath, but with like 140 pounds of equipment on him. 1974, when he turned 60, he swam from Alcatraz to Fisherman's Wharf.
Wow.
Which is the thing they say you're not supposed to be able to do. Like why people can't break out. Sure.
Well, that's
probably other reasons.
It's really fun.
But he was also a handcuffed, shackled, and towing a 1,000-pound boat.
Wait, what?
Wait,
as he was swimming.
Swim? Wow. Just like doing like a
dog paddle. Yeah. His hands were together and his legs were together. Yep.
Wow.
1984, at the age of 70, he was handcuffed, shackled, and fighting this is directly off of his website. So, you know, you can.
Sure.
A little bit flair.
Yeah. And fighting strong winds and currents. He towed 70 boats with 70 people from the Queensway Bridge in the Long Beach Harbor to the Queen Mary, 1.5 miles. So he was hooked up to 70 boats and towed them all.
And he was 70 years old.
He was 70 years old.
It's like, let's take this old man and throw him in the water.
We can drag the boats. Yeah. Whoa, he's dragging the boats. Uh-oh.
Oh, crap.
Yes.
Yeah, this is the Jack LaLanne that I remember from my childhood. Is like the TV show, I guess, was still running, and him just doing these crazy feats of strength. Yeah, old man doing strength stuff.
For nearly four decades, JMK Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started JMK Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. JMK Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com.
Hey, Matt, did you know that wombats poop cubes?
Nope, never heard that before.
Did you know the unicorn is the national animal of Scotland, Ken?
I didn't know, nor do I care.
Neil, did you know that Liechtenstein is the only doubly landlocked country in Europe?
Jeff, isn't that an American pop artist?
Well, actually, it's both. If you want to learn things like that and more, join us each week on Triviality, a pub trivia-style game show podcast where a lack of seriousness meets a little bit of knowledge.
Listen in each week to answer general knowledge trivia alongside exciting guests from around the world.
And we're here too.
Join us every Tuesday for new hour-long episodes of Triviality, plus tons of extra theme content on everything from The Office and Lord of the Rings to science and geography.
And sometimes we even do sports.
Find us on all your preferred podcast apps and take part in the fun of playing bar trivia without the need to wear pants.
Real mature, Jeff.
Forget it, Neil. It's Triviality.
So I have a quiz for you guys. It's about celebrity endorsements for fitness products.
Okay.
And these are celebrities that you know, and they're products also that you know. And all of them, let's say, they don't really work. That's the thing with them. Like, they work-ish.
Yeah.
Like-ish. We'll kick it off with a product that was recently proven not to help wearers exercise more intensely, burn more calories, or improve muscle strength and tone. These are shape-up shoes.
Yeah. Oh, Skechers.
Yes, yeah. Skechers. Which reality star endorsed Skechers? Who was the spokesperson?
It is Kim Kardashian.
Kim Kardashian.
Along with many other, like,
yeah.
There was Brooke Burke. was one.
I think weirdly, Joe Montana also
endorsed
these.
That was my follow-up question. Which Hall of Fame quarterback also endorsed Skechers?
And did they don't do anything, though?
No.
Those were the ones with the weird rounded bottoms. Yeah.
So you
right?
constantly have to be balancing yourself when you're on them.
But not really.
It feels like you're walking on sand. Oh. So it feels I'm working my legs more, but I think it might be negligible. But also it's like a lot of people who had these shoes are like, oh, I should walk more now that I have these special shoes.
This is like going to the gym. It's not. Kim Kardashian also endorsed which weight loss supplement? And I'll give you a selection. Zantax, Quick Trim, or Hydroxycut.
X-Lax.
No.
Wait.
I think it's Quick Trim.
Quick Trim.
Yeah. Yes.
Here's a softball for you guys. Which celebrity endorsed the Thighmaster?
Suzanne Summers.
The Thighmaster was developed by Joshua Reynolds, who was the mastermind behind what fad of the 70s and 80s?
Oh. Paul. Pet Rock.
Very close.
Oh.
Chia Pet.
No.
I was going to guess Pet Rock.
It's the mood ring.
Oh.
See, that makes me doubt the legitimacy of the Thighmaster. Brought to you by the guy who made the mood ring.
It works-ish. Just the way a mood ring works-ish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He chose Suzanne Summers, also big in the 70s.
Uh-huh. She's fit, though.
Right. Indubitably.
This reality star endorsed Dr. Siegel's cookie diet, where you have one meal and 6 cookies a day. So it does work if you're just eating one meal and 6 cookies a day.
Well, yeah.
Sure.
But these are like cookies loaded with fiber. Uh-huh. Fiber, so you poop.
They're poop cookies. Yes.
Okay. They're poop cookies.
Oh, the poop cookie diet.
I've only seen these ads for the cookie diet on like SkyMall. Right. You know, like I've never really seen it advertised.
I'll give you a hint. This celebrity lost a lot of weight after she had her baby.
Osmond?
No. Well, no, she had her baby like 30 years ago.
Well, I don't know when this, thing was.
Kate Gosselin.
No. Oh, that was good. It's, Snooki.
Snooki. Snooki cookie.
Snooki had the cookies. Yeah.
Oh, man.
All right.
You know what? I would buy poop cookie before I would buy Snooki cookie.
This conservative talk show host stars in an infomercial promoting the ProForm Ab Glider. It's a swinging, swiveling contraption that promises to burn twice the calories of other similar machines. But personal trainers say you're not going to get an 8-pack, a 6-pack, a 4-pack, a 3-pack. You're not going to get toned using this.
Not even a 3-pack.
Well, I can't imagine like Bill O'Reilly or Rush Limbaugh doing anything fitness related. Is it Ted Nugent?
No.
I don't know.
What is it? It's a radio.
It's a conservative talk show host.
Conservative talk show host.
Mm-hmm. It's a woman.
Conservative? Is it Laura Ingraham? Who has a conservative?
Sarah Palin. No.
No.
Conservative talk
show. Elizabeth Hasselbeck.
Oh. Yeah.
That's right. Because she's that's right. Yes. She's not on The View anymore.
Mm-hmm. But she has her own show on Fox.
That's right.
Yeah, of course.
Reality star and conservative talk show.
Yeah,
host.
That's true. She's on Survivor first.
You're right.
Yep,
you're right.
That was her claim to fame.
Yeah.
Did she win Survivor?
She did. Did she win Survivor? I thought she was runner up that year.
I think she might have been runner up. I'm not positive. I don't know.
Okay. To date, he has his own abs workout DVD, a line of GNC chewable supplements, and reportedly scored $400,000 to endorse the protein-infused Devotion Vodka. And this is a reality star.
Vodka.
Yeah, that's a good way to do it.
Okay.
Vodka.
Is it The Situation?
Yes.
There you go.
I'm like, vodka and abs. Oh, uh-huh. Situation.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. Good.
I like protein-infused vodka.
Yeah. It only has like 2 grams of protein in it.
It's not like an egg.
Oh, so it's not a fitness. It's not a fitness
it's
vodka.
A fitness
yeah.
Oh, that's how they market it. It's a fitness vodka. This actress is the spokesperson for Trop 15, Tropicana's reduced sugar and calorie line of juices. In her best known role, she played a character who tried bizarre crash diets like the Japanese porn star diet, which involves eating only paper. Karen.
Jane Krakowski from 30 Rock.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, as Jenna Maroney eating only paper to lose weight. And finally, This reality star launched a line of skinny girl branded supplements, margaritas, and shapewear. Karen?
Bethany, forgot what's her last name, but she was from Real Housewives of New York.
Oh,
yes.
Frankel. Yes. Bethany Frankel.
Bethany Frankel.
Oh, man.
Those are everywhere.
A lot of reality stars.
Yeah.
This quiz.
Good job, you.
Karen, I think you suggested this topic so you could get all the questions right.
No, yeah. Colin suggested this topic.
Oh, okay. You subliminally planted it in his head by whispering into it while he sleeps. Or that.
Colin's our sports guy, but Karen's our fitness girl.
That's right. That's
fitness
right.
Fitness whiz.
Fit whiz?
Fit whiz?
Fit whiz?
Witness?
All right. Well, my turn. And I have a story. My point is not to gross anybody out. Mm-hmm. Like, there is science behind it.
Uh-huh.
But I just want to give you that disclaimer.
But you're going to do it anyway.
You were attracted to it because it was gross. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah, no.
I know you.
Yeah. So earlier this year in 2013, I ran a race called the Golden Gate Relay. And it's 200 miles across 36 different cities, and it's a relay race. What you're supposed to do is you have a team of people, and I was on a team, and then you run different legs or different assigned distances, and it's all day, all night. You can take turns sleeping when you're not running in the car, but
Your team is always running.
Mm-hmm. Most teams have 12 people. We had 7, which meant we had to do double duty, and we had to run more per person to try to cover those 200 miles. I think it was maybe during my second distance I had to run. It was in the middle of nowhere. It was like in the rural kind of areas of through Napa. It was 94 degrees outside. It was super hot. And I realized that I had my female monthly gift hit me.
Karen,
and it hit me hard.
Oh no.
And the thing is with these races, with a lot of endurance sports, you can't really do anything about it. Like, I mean,
you choose not to do anything about it.
I was in the middle of nowhere. Like, there's no aid stop. If I were to stop, like, okay, I can stop, but then what?
I don't know. Right. Like, I get MacGyver. We're going to figure this out now.
Right.
I had
twigs and mud.
Yeah.
I had 6 miles to go.
Oh no.
I did it. I ran the whole way, and then
you go, girl.
Keep in mind, my teammates were all dudes. So when I had to stop at the exchange point where I gave them the relay thing,
right? Yeah.
All the guys were like, "Oh!" I was like, "It's not a big deal.
It's okay."
I took them out. It's fine.
And I was so. I mean, this is really traumatic. I was really embarrassed. It's so embarrassing.
It's okay.
I was like, I was mortified. I was completely mortified. Yeah. But like, what could I do?
Yeah.
I mean, what can you do?
Yeah.
It's not. If I had to pee, I can stop and just go pee.
Yeah.
This I could not really control or do anything. So I was like, oh my God, this is going to be the most embarrassing moment of the trip, of the whole race. It's like me dripping blood everywhere. It wasn't the worst, most embarrassing moment, because the next person.
All you have to do is to be the second most embarrassing story.
They'll forget about it. So it was my teammate's turn to run. And I think this was a couple miles in. He had 8 miles to go. It's also under heat. It was during the daytime. Pooped his pants.
I was going to say, there's only one thing he could really do.
Accidentally, or what? However it happened, he pooped his pants.
Accidentally or intentionally.
So he pooped his pants, and he ran like that for the rest of the way. And he had to change, and good thing we had, extra shorts or whatever.
Uh-huh.
But I was like, good, no one's going to remember my story. Everybody just remembers the guy who pooped his pants.
Oh,
anyways.
Is that true?
So
okay.
This in a lot of either triathlons, cycling, running, marathoning, ultra marathon, when you have endurance sports, this is a problem. The pooping her pants. Mm. Why is this? So I don't know if you guys know Paula Radcliffe, very, very famous marathoner. She's a British distance runner, and she currently holds the women's world record for marathon. And she infamously in, I think, maybe the London Marathon,
yeah,
she was suffering some sort of GI gastrointestinal issues, mm-hmm, I think around mile 22. Keep in mind, this is like a couple of years ago. So everything was televised. Like people, you know, their cameras following runners, and she's one of the fastest.
Yeah.
And so quickly, she just squatted down and pulled down her running briefs and pooped and pulled her shorts back up and ran again. Yeah. And it was all caught on television. Like you see her squat. And
so that's how you do it. That's how a pro does it. That's not like
she does it.
Right. Yeah.
She does it in, it's less than 2 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you watch, you can go on YouTube and watch this clip. It's like you didn't even know
what
happened.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me just do that. Do that. Load it right up right now.
And guess what? She still won.
Nice.
She still won that. And so it is.
So that does make sense. It's like, look, if you think you have to poop, you might as well just like,
just go,
you know, just no, I mean, not just go, but like stop and then go. Because it's like 2 seconds of embarrassment versus like,
now you're going to carry it around.
For the whole run. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay.
In a 2008 study of almost 1,300 runners, found that at least 45% complained that there are GI issues related to, you know, during the race.
Huh.
And it's the GI tract is really sensitive to stress and running and anticipation, the anxiety. It's really stressful. And also, I mean, when you run, your intestines, they jostle, and all the blood in your body is being rerouted to your vital organs or to your muscles from your legs. So the balance of your body is kind of off. And so your GI tract will act up. You know, there's also dehydration, a bunch of these factors working against you as you're doing endurance sports. And a lot of people will want to poop. However, there is a hypothesis. It's a theory. I don't know if it's true or not. Probably not. But this is, and of course, music lovers and concert goers probably are know this phenomenon. It's called the brown note. And the theory is this true.
This is not true.
This can't possibly be true.
I've heard this, but this is not.
The theory is the theory of the brown note.
What is it?
Is that there is some sort of frequency that once it matches the natural frequency of your, you know, intestines or of your body, then you have resonance and you will lose control of your muscles and poop will come out.
It's like an opera singer who like can shatter a glass because they're not.
Exactly.
So I was like, they can
like
match
that.
The note that opens, like shatters
and
your.
A lot of there's theory that because you're running at a regular pace, somehow, maybe sometimes it will match the natural frequency and resonate and, you know, you lose control of. Yeah. They did test this on Mythbusters, the brown note. More of like in a concert angle, like so they had like people surrounded by
different notes,
different frequencies by on the street.
It didn't happen.
It's like,
crossed it off the list.
Like they look at their butts to see if anything happens.
Anything?
No.
All right.
Next frequency.
Oh, this is gonna be good.
I really thought it was gonna be that one.
They did not find a brown note in their experiment.
I can assure you that if there were such a thing as a brown note, the nation's teenage boys would be playing it at large by high volume in every neighborhood around the country. Just for kicks.
So there you go.
Cool story, bro.
It's scientific. It does happen.
Yeah.
But it's probably not related to the mysterious brown note or
the elusive.
It's mostly most likely just due to intense stress to your body. I mean, like also like famous
runners runs
Tour de France cycling. They sometimes just have to go.
When you're on the move in a race, you got to keep moving.
Or triathletes, they just pee in the water. Like, I mean, well, what are you supposed to do? Like, you can't.
What I like about this podcast.
Wait a minute. I'm not a triathlete and I pee in the water. So.
Don't swim with Chris.
I mean, that's just normal.
Technically,
behavior.
If you're out in open waters, you're swimming with like fish pee and poo all the time.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I'm just adding to the vibrant ecosystem.
Oh my God. What I like about this podcast is we're not afraid to take on the taboo subject.
Like, personal taboo subject.
We keep it super real for everybody.
Calling all kids in the car. Brittany and Meredith here from the chart-topping Family Road Trip Trivia Podcast. Are you dreading another silent car ride with the fam? We've got the cure. Three rounds of fresh trivia every single week. Movies, music, even science and Disney. We've got something for every trivia buff in the car. No more crickets chirping on those long journeys. The Family Road Trip Trivia Podcast is your secret weapon for connecting and laughing with kids of all ages. Teens, toddlers, adults, it doesn't matter. Spark their curiosity and challenge their brains with every episode. New episodes drop weekly wherever you get your podcasts. Search for the Family Road Trip Trivia Podcast and turn those car rides into epic adventures.
Well, I have absolutely no idea how to follow that up. So let me ask you guys a question here.
Awkward. I feel like we've shared so much.
We've shared so much already.
Well, you know, I'll take the transition from peeing in the water. How about that? I'll find a way to. I'll force a segue here. All right. What would you say if I told you guys that in order to graduate from college, you had to be able to swim 50 yards in under a minute and then tread water continuously for 5 minutes?
Is that like a maybe, like a fitness test?
Yeah, this is not some requirement from 100 years ago or anything like that. This is today.
Mm-hmm. Whoa.
At Washington and Lee University in Virginia, they are one of many schools that still have swimming requirements for students.
I like it.
I had not heard of these swimming requirements. I was just talking with my mom over Thanksgiving, and she mentioned that when she was at the University of Washington, she had to pass a swim test for graduation. And we got to talking, and it interested me enough that I did a little bit of research. There was at one time, as late as the 1970s, almost half of the colleges and universities in America had some sort of swimming requirement.
Really?
To graduate. Yes. And this is so fascinating.
Yeah.
There are not that many left today, but here are samples of some of the requirements. At Cornell, you have to swim 3 lengths in the pool, at least one on the front and one on the back. At MIT, you have to swim 100 yards. Uh-huh. At Bryn Mawr, you have to swim continuously for 10 minutes.
That's a lot.
Float on your back for 1 minute. Okay. And then tread water for 1 minute.
Okay. All right.
And, you know, these go on and on. Some schools have time restrictions. Some don't. As if showing up at school as a freshman is not stressful enough.
Yeah.
And getting into a swimsuit.
And fraught with enough potential for embarrassment. Yeah, I want you to imagine you show up as a freshman. You got to get in a swimsuit, line up, and then exhibit your swimming prowess or lack of prowess in front of your fellow incoming students.
So what if you go to college and you don't know how to swim?
So these schools that have the requirements, if you cannot pass the freshman incoming swimming test, or you just say, I am not a swimmer, I'm going to drown if you put me in there, you must take a swimming class. At schools that have these requirements, there are often local legends about where did this come from? You know, one of the most common ones is, oh, there's a wealthy benefactor, and as a condition of a donation, you know, he or she required that all students take a swimming test because they had a son that drowned tragically and they want to ensure this never happens again. This is actually similar to the story that's told at Harvard. At Harvard, it is told that there's a woman who is a widow due to the Titanic, and she wanted to ensure as a condition of her contribution for the Harry Elkins Widener Library that they establish a freshman swimming test.
You have to swim in ice cold water for hours. Throw them into iceberg laden water and then see how they do.
I particularly like the origin story told at Columbia. Apparently, one story is told that the swimming test dates back to a requirement that students could swim across the Hudson to New Jersey in the event of an attack. And
that I believe.
Really? You believe that? Really? Yeah. What is interesting is no one is 100% sure why schools started administering or started requiring swim tests. It seems to date back to shortly after World War I, though. And it is true that after World War I, the Red Cross was really making a big push to increase swimming abilities. I mean, tragically, there are stories that a lot of soldiers died. They drowned by not being able to reach shore, you know, especially with equipment on, you know, in a landing. But it really seems to have come about between
World War One or World War Two as kind of just a general public safety measure.
I believe it. Like, I think it's weird like for like people our generation who still don't know how to swim. Just in case, like, that's a skill I want to have.
Mm-hmm. It seems like there's a cultural bias, though. Like, if you weren't raised in a place near water, or you didn't have access to pools all the time, now you have to learn how to swim as an adult, and, like, you're not going to graduate from college if you can't figure it out or you don't want to. Like,
right. Well, at least they're willing to give you the instruction to learn how.
Yeah.
But if you're like, I don't want to. Yeah. Thank you.
Yep. Well, hey, then don't go to that school. Yeah.
Do they actually fail people if they don't pass the... like, you don't get your diploma if you don't swim?
Yes. I'm sure they work with you quite a bit if it seems like you're not going to get your diploma because of the swim.
There is one fun anecdote I came across in a couple of places. A very well-known and successful PhD from Columbia who was denied his diploma, apparently.
Really?
And he wrote in 60 years later saying, basically, hey, I've learned how to swim in the meantime. Can I have my diploma?
Oh, my God.
And they did officially.
Hey, you don't get diplomas if you don't return library books like me.
You didn't get your diploma.
I didn't get my diploma.
I remember that. That's right. They would hold it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait, but you still graduated.
I still graduated. Yeah. I just didn't get a paper.
Oh,
I think I did. I was like, whatever.
Joke's on them.
I lost the book. I don't know.
What do you want from me? Money? No. Oh, I guess you do.
All right, and that's our show. Thank you guys for joining me, and thank you guys, listeners, for listening. Hope you learned a lot about fitness and pooping your pants and Jack LaLanne and celebrity endorsements and basketball and various other sport brands. You can find us on iTunes, on Stitcher, on SoundCloud, and also on our website, goodjobbrain.com. Join us on Twitter at goodjobbrain or on Facebook /goodjobbrain. And we'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.